This podcast is being brought to you by ArborJet and Ecolagel Solutions, partners in plant healthcare. Trees, turf, or ornamentals, we have products from your soil to crown. Thank you so much, ArborJet, for sponsoring this episode. Hey guys, welcome to the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. This is Britt. Hope you're doing well out there. I know in most regions, especially in the southern, things are popping off for you. You guys are out rocking and rolling. So hope you're getting after it as I am in your earbuds right now. Hope you guys are making hay while the sun shines. So keep after it. We've got a good interview here today. Michael Bedell, Bedell Property Management. And then some of you may know him as the Debt-Free Landscaper on Instagram. Really solid guy, a lot of fun. you meet a lot of people in the social media world. This guy really stands out. I think the main thing is just his heart and passion behind the industry. And then just a truly nice guy. Seems like everywhere he turns, whoever he comes in contact with, people only have good things to say about him. And you instantly can become friends with this guy. So wanted to interview him, get him on here. There's a lot of good content. We talk finances, business, kind of get his background story. So hope you enjoy this one. And then also wanted to drop a note. We try really, really hard to bring you guys value. And I hope you're getting value out of it. From some of the feedback I get on Instagram and the phone calls. Sounds like we're affecting change in some of you guys, and hopefully you can learn from our losses as well as the things we're doing right. But I want to ask a favor of you. If you will go and leave a rating on Apple Podcast, leave a star rating. If it's one star, I don't care. Just leave what you think the podcast is worth, and then leave a review. What that does is that's going to help us reach more guys and girls in the lawn care industry. So if you wouldn't mind doing that for me, that would help us out. That's going to give us more traction moving forward. And that way, if you do like this podcast, it can stay alive. So we got to have kind of some sort of fuel to keep the podcast growing. Also, before we get into the show, wanted to announce a giveaway we're going to be doing on Instagram. So go to Instagram, turn your post notifications on. Because for our listeners, we're going to be doing a pretty sweet giveaway. I will tell you, it has to do with some apparel for the Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. So turn your notifications on, and we'll either have you guys just like tag a few people in the comments of that post, or maybe even screenshot and share one of your favorite episodes on your feed. So either way, we'll let you know over there on our Instagram page, at Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. Again, that's at Lawn Care Leaders Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook now and just search Lawn Care Leaders. And then now we've got a couple YouTube videos up. So just now getting the YouTube channel up and going. So anyways, here's our interview with Michael Bedell. Hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back with you here in a little bit.
Put things away. Shuffle back here.
Good deal. Good deal. So what's going on, bro?
Well, just first day in like a week. I haven't had to go out at like 3 a.m. deal with snow and ice. So it's actually it's nice to get a little office time and get to drink a cup of coffee in my office and not a plow truck.
not bouncing around pushing snow.
Yeah, it's we had a slow start to winter, and then it's kind of all come at once the past 4 or 5 weeks, and definitely don't have it as bad as some other people. There's I know you get west of us, like Minnesota, Montana, those guys have just gotten annihilated.
They've gotten hammered all year. Where are you out of again?
Southeast Michigan, so I'm about a half hour, 40 minutes west of downtown Detroit, right in between Detroit and Lansing.
Okay, so you still do quite a bit of snow pushing, huh?
Yep. Average is about 45 to 50 inches a year.
Okay.
And I know we're up over 30 already, so.
Gosh. We've got, so in Kansas City, we get little 3 to 5 inch here and there, like once every 2 weeks, and we complain about that. So I'm just getting a few more things set up here. Are you planning on, you think you'll go live on Instagram or anything like that? Do you have any other videos that you're going to want me to push out later?
You know, I haven't actually put any thought into that.
No, it's all good.
I was going to say, I didn't, you know, this is really your content, but yeah, whatever you want me to do to help promote it.
No, it's up to you. If it helps you, I know you kind of have a lot of content creation on the debt-free landscaper side, so it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, cool.
You'll see with the conversation, I'm pretty casual, pretty low-key, so.
Cool.
Either way. Let's do, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to address, what did we say? You wanted to talk about kind of the next day approach.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I like that you actually put a name to it, because I've been doing that for like a decade, but I probably would have gone over better with employees and stuff if I had like a name, not just like, doesn't want to spend money.
Yeah, exactly. He's a tightwad. That's what everybody says around here. Oh, he just doesn't. I'm like, I don't want to spend money, but also I'm spending money. Let me show you.
Yeah, that's it. It's they don't necessarily, especially further down the line, they have no idea what the budget is or where we're sitting in terms of that.
They just see the equipment they have to use.
That's it. They're saying what's on the job. We're looking at the big picture.
Yep. Okay, so you want to do that. We'll obviously talk about debt-free.
Sure.
And then just maybe managing cash flow. That sound good?
Perfect.
Okay. We'll get into it. And then if you're all right with it, we'll just kind of start with a brief bio on you. So,
yeah.
And then I do intros later. I used to try to do the intro face-to-face. But on some of the beginning interviews, I got really nervous and would completely mess that over. So I was just like, I'll save that for later. So we'll get into
it. That's smart. That's my buddy Julio does the same thing with the Lawn Care Success podcast or whatever. He's done the same thing. He found out it's easier just do the interview and then, you know, you edit it up later at the intro, the outro, maybe an advertisement in the middle.
Exactly.
And then it's good. And he's like, you know, he also realized like, sometimes you end up taking like 10 minutes of somebody else's time, and it's like me and him both come from a music background, so it's like there's this thing called red light fever, where you can like as a musician practice things like 1,000 times, you got perfect, and then you go in the studio and the red light comes on, and like 10 takes, and it's all terrible, none of them are keepable.
Brain fart, yeah, exactly. Red light comes on, deer in the headlights.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it just helps the conversation stay a little casual. And I honestly, a lot of this stuff, like right now, sometimes it ends up on the podcast just because it's kind of nice for people to hear, you know, the ins and outs of people's day as opposed to a very structured conversation. So,
sure.
And it's Bedell, correct?
Yep, Bedell.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Cool, man. Well, we'll jump into it. Michael Bedell, why don't you give us your origin story. Give us a brief bio personal and also talk a little bit about your company, how you got started, and then kind of jump along maybe some of the ups and downs, key highlights along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Brent.
Yeah,
so
appreciate
I'm
it.
Michael. Yeah, I'm Michael Bedell, owner of Bedell Property Management. I was born and raised in Southeast Michigan.
All right.
Started out as just the neighborhood lawn kid, mowing neighbors' lawns. Once I got my driver's license, first vehicle was a pickup truck. So I expanded into kind of mowing family friends' lawns that were in the community. I also had a couple more like typical high school jobs. I was a dishwasher, worked at the local ice arena. I even taught some guitar lessons.
Nice.
Some people.
Hustler,
some people,
man. You were a hustler from the ice arena to the guitar center.
Oh yeah. I certainly always was kind of ambitious, stayed busy as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
But it gave me the both sides of the coin spectrum at a real young age. The working for myself a little bit and getting having to be a self starter, obviously having to be able to go get that work done.
Yeah.
But also being able to do it on my schedule versus having bosses, especially when you're 16 years old, that can be a brunt experience. For some of those jobs, I was kind of like the I had older friends that worked there, and I became like their little friend, and some of the gnarly tasks got delegated to me. So you were
the freshman. You had some initiation that you had to go through.
Correct. And, you know, at the time that was a little rough, but that ended up being a long-term good experience for me because I realized very early on the downsides to being the lackey or pulling the corporate chain, even though these were still small businesses. Yeah. But
and I realize in those two, like it helps you when you become in a leadership role or a boss, even if it's how not to treat other people. It's a good lesson learned, and I learned a lot of those as well. So,
100%. So I made the decision right about 18, 19 years old that if I wanted to have some happiness, I'd probably be better trying to work for myself or at least work for myself as much as possible.
Yeah.
And that's when Bedell Property Management became a serious focus. Went and got a degree in ornamental horticulture and landscape design.
Nice.
And those became major assets to the strength and growth of my company. Yeah. And so Bedell Property Management formally started as like not the neighborhood lawn kid back in 2005.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've just grown and maintained ever since.
Okay. So hit me with this. You started in 2005. How far into the company did you hire your first guy, crew, and then when did you kind of expand from there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first couple of years, it was really just me kind of fitting stuff in between class. And by the time I had started going to school for horticulture and design, I knew there was now going to be a much more intense level of seriousness with this. So that was the first time maybe I started advertising, doing those type of things. And my first employee was actually my younger brother.
There you go.
And with that came some other friends, and that almost came more as out of a necessity of I only had so much time. I still had class, and I was still teaching some guitar lessons back then. So as we had more opportunities come our way, as great as that was, I really only had so much time to do it.
Yeah.
So that kind of started the additional employees.
Yeah.
And
that kind of flexed that muscle of having people on board. And that's kind of my approach as well. It's like, hey, Bobby, you're not doing anything. You're sitting there playing video games. Why don't you come help me on a landscaping job? So sounds like that.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And so that was nice. My brother, when he graduated, he actually was a part of the company for a while as more of like a manager. He had part ownership role in the company.
Okay.
And at that point, he as his buy-in, he came into the company with a truck.
Okay.
And that became a bought company vehicle.
Yeah.
And so that was really the launch of the second crew.
Okay.
We even went to a third crew at one point. I'd say like somewhere between like 2010, 2011. And at one point we had 13 guys on staff. And that was when we were doing a lot more maintenance work.
Yeah.
We were doing some subcontracting work in terms of mowing and maintenance for a couple larger landscape companies in the area.
Yeah.
That was fine. It was a great way to grow the company. It gave us a bunch of experience.
Yeah.
Long term, it isn't really what we've stayed doing.
Yeah.
The company's changed almost drastically since then. But
How many years in, if you don't mind me asking, was that?
That was like year 4 or 5 that we really I think made the jump from like 2 trucks to 3 trucks.
And then you started subcontracting at that time as well.
Well, we were not necessarily subcontracting out. We were working as a subcontractor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That definitely ballooned our revenue as a company, and there's a lot of opportunities. The market was, that was kind of the fallout of the recession, which, was real hard hit here in Southeast Michigan, being that we're automotively heavy here.
Yeah, yeah.
So the recession hit hard and it stayed long.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really the opportunity for a lot of installation or high income type opportunities. So it was more just get what you could. And because we were younger and newer, we had lower overhead, and I think that made us appealing to some of those bigger contractors where we could perform work at a little bit cheaper costs than they could, and it created a win-win.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, I try to stress that to some of the younger guys getting in as well. It's kind of twofold. One, a lot of times you're afraid of your competition, and I tell them, don't be. Go introduce yourself. They're going to help you. You can help them. And a lot of times you can find gaps in service coverage where you guys can refer business back and forth. We work with anywhere from 5 to 10 subcontractors where we'll pitch them business. They pitch us business. But in the beginning, it was those key relationships that really helped us take, you know, 3 or 4 steps forward instead of one. You know, you make one of those key relate. Yeah, you and then I think the other thing, and obviously I'm speaking to our listeners now, not necessarily you, but one thing to keep in mind when you're addressing these subcontractors, always trying to add more value than you're getting. So if you know, hey, I can pitch this guy mulch jobs, or I may do irrigation maintenance, but I don't do installs. All of those key relationships, stop and talk to every person because that's huge. And then also just the hustle factor. Like, you guys were willing to do quality work at lower cost to put you further ahead. I mean, you can speak to that since you brought it up. Let's stay there for a little bit and then we'll kind of transition into the next few topics.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Quality work has always been a big thing that even started back when I was just the neighborhood lawn kid. I think that was part of the appeal was that it's always been about dotting I's and crossing T's, and that was part of the incentive to go to school was I was getting hit with questions I didn't have the answer to, but I had the desire to learn the answer. With those relationships, I totally agree, Britt. Being able to add value, whether it's your own clients or in that case a subcontractor, that's huge. And it's all about the relationships and, you got me thinking back now. And yeah, there were even key individuals in those companies that, based on the relationship we had, I'm thinking back, I know there were times where, they had to, for the sake of, how their company operated, give a couple contractors a look at it. But they flat out told me like, hey, Mike, this is yours if you want it. Yeah. Like, it's got to be X. Is that good? All right, let's sign off and it's yours. Yeah. You know, I'll say I showed this to a couple guys that some guy may have a look at it. But those all came from just being, from having those relationships, taking the time, trying to add value.
Yeah.
Those people knowing that you want to make them look like a winner. That's probably like the biggest thing I'd say to somebody younger who wants to go that route is if you can make the person who's hiring you look like a winner, it's really easy for them to continue giving you work.
Yes,
exactly. But if anything, they may give you as much as you can possibly handle.
Exactly. I like that. That's really, really good stuff. So hopefully those young guys out there with just a push mower and a minivan like I started are taking notes. So let's transition into this now. So you've been in business how long now? Would have been
year 15 for us now.
Year 15, congrats, man. That's huge. Okay, so 15 years. You've now started putting content on Instagram and other platforms as the debt-free landscaper. So I want to just stay here for pretty much the duration. We'll talk debt-free landscaper, what that means, what you're doing over there, and our viewpoints just around cash flow management, financing, all that stuff that kind of goes along with that.
Perfect. Yeah, so debt-free landscaper actually just came from conversations with my buddy Brian Fullerton, who a lot of you guys know owns Brian's Lawn Maintenance, 10 minutes from where we're located.
I haven't met him yet. Everybody I talk to knows him, though. So he must be a pretty quality guy.
Yeah, that's it. He's certainly well-traveled. There's no doubt about that. A lot of people have had the opportunity to either meet him at an industry event or I know firsthand he spends a lot of time on the phone connecting with people, a lot of time burning up DMs on Instagram. Yeah. But from me becoming friends with him and it starting out as just friends and then him kind of the, making me a mentor of his, picking my brain on some stuff, especially when it came to snow and ice management.
Yeah.
And then introducing me to his buddy, Brandon, from Envision Landscape Solutions.
Okay.
And it was Brandon's first year of business last year, and Brandon was a subcontractor of ours on some stuff. And so getting to kind of pour into Brandon and help steer the ship a little bit there.
Yeah.
And then with Brian, they both kind of got on me like, hey, you may not realize how much you've poured into us here.
Yeah.
And you've given us a lot of helpful tips. Maybe you ought to share that with more than just us.
Yeah.
And I'm busy going a million miles an hour running my company, servicing our clients.
Yeah.
And trying to spend some time with my family.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going, yeah, like that was helpful. Like, you know, because you hope you help people, but you don't, like, you know, I guess at the end of the day, I see the results and what it's done for the business. That's kind of like, So they kind of got on me for it. And I said, yeah, you ought to put some stuff out there, ought to help people. And so I went for it.
That's awesome.
There was a few different ideas for the name Debt-Free Landscaper. One of the reasons we went with that even was just aside from we agree with the philosophy, especially for certain types of companies more than others, but it's kind of, and I've had some people say this, it's kind of a jarring name. Like, you're going through Instagram or whatever and you're like, Debt-Free Landscaper, what is this guy? So that's cool because it initiates the conversation a little bit. If you want, I can give you a little bit more overview on what exactly it is, what we do.
Yeah, that's great. Sorry, man. I'm coughing my lungs up here. I don't mean to keep breaking you up. Last week, I had like sinus bronchitis or something, so I've been trying to work through that. Ugh. So, apologize for that. Keep rolling. Yeah, so Debt-Free Landscaper, that's kind of the origin story, how it was born per se. Let's get into what's your approach with that now. So, obviously, try to stay debt-free. Tell me how that structures in your business. Obviously, that's your overarching thesis for everything you do. So just talk a little bit about that, maybe the ups and downs of that, because we've been going through that as a company. We're really trying to scale, but we are debt-free. So with that comes very, very tight cash flow issues.
It does, yeah, absolutely. So with Debt-Free Landscaper, we're trying to help contractors grow their knowledge, confidence, and income. And, one of the big overarching pillars behind that, especially because it's more towards guys that are starting out and maybe are just solo owner operator the point where they've just got a couple crews.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're still a small guy in the game. And from my opinion, you've kind of got two overarching philosophies in landscaping.
Yeah.
You're either an active owner, and it's you're very active, and your company is really your high income skill.
Yeah.
And so by you spending the time there, like I know I was listening to a podcast you were doing with Corey Ballard, and he was saying a lot of guys are too quick to hop out when they're still small time.
Yeah.
And if they spend less time on the golf course and more time invested in the business, it's your high income skill. You can use that money you make with your company to do a whole myriad of things.
Yeah.
But you'll if you do it right, your ability to make money in that type of setup will far exceed basically any other way that you could go about making money.
Yeah.
Versus some of the companies, say we subcontracted for, they're on the other end where it's almost that company is just a passive investment of theirs. They've got other people in place.
Mm.
The owners I may only see every once in a while.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but they likely have other investments they're doing.
Yeah.
And at that point, you've ran into big boy issues, the whole debt-free landscaper thing. If that's how you want to run your company, great. Obviously, it can work. We all know Dave Ramsey runs, though it's not landscape-related, a large company, debt-free. So it is possible. I've even met large construction companies that are debt-free and actually get to the point where they can self-insure because they've got so much cash on hand. Which you know is its whole own thing to speak to. But getting back to our core focus here, with small guys, it's your high income skill, and the more leverage you have in your business, leverage being debt, be it trucks, equipment, lines of credit, whatever it is, that is on a monthly basis eating into not only your cash flow, but your high income skill. So if you've got all this money coming in, but it's all tied up going right back out, you're caught in the runaway train. And I've had some larger companies even say to me over the years that you hit a certain point and you've got to grow like exponentially to make even the same money. And so I said it on another podcast, I really believe the companies that make under $1 million a year, somewhere in the $600,000 to $1 million, it's very easy to have either a low leverage or a debt-free position. In doing so, you just, the other end of it is you've got to know your numbers. You've got to maintain good cash flow, and you've got to have good understanding of where the money's coming and going, because your intent isn't to just finance things, or if you get in a pinch, just take out a loan, because that kind of goes against your company's philosophy.
Exactly. No, that's really, really good. I love that you brought up leverage. I drop the word margin a lot. I try to explain what I mean by margin, but I've always operated both my personal life and my business off of margin. And margin creates that leverage that you're talking about. And if people can kind of get the mental image, you know, you have margin in your life that creates leverage. And that leverage is leverage for cash, time, and speed. So when you have those abilities, you know, speed is, you know, you can pivot and do something else, or pivot this direction and take advantage of a discount on equipment. And you have the margin and cash to do so. So those three things were huge for me, just cash, time, and speed. I have time as kind of a mental image, just because a lot of guys get in a pinch. I'm not perfect. I've put myself in this position recently, so I can speak from experience. But if you have margin with cash and cash flow, you can sit on equipment and get what it's worth when you're looking to sell, or when you're looking to buy a truck. If you've got that margin, you've got that time, you can take advantage of deals. You're not just having to pay for it because you need it today. Got to get out the door next week. And we've put ourselves in that position. So I'm not saying we're perfect, but definitely definitely learning that as well.
Absolutely. I would believe that we're in the same boat. You know, it's good to have goals. Obviously, we all want to try and strive for perfection. You know, life happens at the same time. There was even an instance where last fall, my company, as much as I didn't want to do it, had to take on just a little bit of a line of credit to pre-order some salt. We're going to run into an issue where it may not be available to us. And I had to face the hard facts of, well, if we don't have salt, I cut our company's income to such a level that it's not really even where we'd lose money. We wouldn't even hit our costs if we didn't have that portion of the business. And it was kind of like, okay, so do I, you know, be so staunch as to like no debt ever. Now we don't salt. Now basically I'm just going to take my company out of the game for months at a time. Or do I take out, you know, something that's a favorable loan, especially because I don't have any debt? It was really easy to get companies to fight each other and get something that worked for us. And it was, to share what we did, I actually took something that was on a little bit longer of a horizon. That way it didn't tie up our cash flow.
Okay.
On the premise that, and we're about to, thankfully, here. I'm waiting on a couple checks to come in the next week, and we're going to knock that baby out. So then we're back to debt free. And I had no issues doing it, even though I loved doing it because I had a plan. I was able to work the plan. The plan had an A, B, and C. Thankfully, we were able to knock it out sooner. Worst case scenario, I was able to get a situation where the guy who was brokering us the salt would buy back my allotment. I was telling a couple of buddies this. Worst case scenario, let's say I had to buy all the salt, so we have continuity in the business. And then it doesn't snow at all. The reason I wanted low payments is I didn't want it to stifle our cash flow. We maybe didn't have money coming in like we should. But that at the end of the day, come April 15th, worst case scenario, I'm getting a check, and that check pays off this debt, and we're good to go.
Yeah.
And then obviously we have the ability to pay it off sooner, as long as we had snow, we're able to get out there, do some work, and recoup the costs.
So explain that to some of the younger guys out there. The difference just between maybe financing equipment, taking a general loan out, and then a line of credit. If you want, I mean, you did a line of credit, so you can start with that one if you want.
Yeah, so basically we were able to go to different lenders, and they were able to, thankfully we were able to get something that was completely unsecured. Sometimes they need to tie it to different assets, be it trucks, equipment, inventory you have.
Yeah.
Essentially, you're given the ability to spend up to X amount of dollars, and that's something that we're going to be able to keep the line open for a little bit. We'll just have all the money still available to us. That wasn't actually really what I was initially looking for. I was more just looking for more of a typical loan, which you get sometimes like as finance to equipment, other times just from a bank or lender. Okay. And that's something that is tied to either equipment or inventory.
Okay.
That's something that sometimes has better, sometimes it's a worse interest rate, just depends on your credit.
So that's just more of a, they give you a cap and you draw on it throughout the year, and then you kind of reassess.
So there's your line of credit. It's just you've got a cap, and you can spend up to X, and as you pay that back, it replenishes the amount of money available to you.
And then obviously you've got your standard loan. Okay, cool. Let's talk about, you brought up some really, really good points throughout that whole conversation. Let's talk about the quote unquote next day approach that I've deemed it.
Yeah.
Where you get in a pinch, you think you need something right away, you need it that day. But maybe you can go another day, and with that extra time, you tend to come up with, some creative ideas as opposed to, you know, just going out and spending more money.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's I like the name of it because it's something we've been doing for a long time, and I think it would have gone over better with employees if I had a nice name for it. Mike doesn't want to spend money. But that's something we've done for a long time. It's mainly come from, I guess I'm a little bit better about the whole delayed gratification thing. I think it's just, it's almost like in my blood. I come from people that did a lot of farming especially farmed their way through the Great Depression. And so there's somewhere genetically in there, the know-how to make do with what you got and maybe fix something in the field and keep yourself moving, even if it's not at 100%. At least you're moving along and it didn't really cost you any money, versus a lot more employees don't want to have to do that. They want something that's quick, easy, turnkey, a little closer to mindless. And so I've definitely had a lot of staff members throughout the year want me to get new X, Y, and Z for them. And if it's something basic, like they need some new shovels or something, you probably need to give them a shovel. Hey, we need new hedge trimmers. Well, why? Yeah. Well, these ones are old.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know.
Like, do they do the job?
They need sharpening or something like that. Maybe it's time to do a round of maintenance on them. But just because something's old doesn't necessarily mean that it's time to get rid of it. So I've done that as much as possible through my company, and sometimes it does come back to bite you every once in a while. I think and you touched on it a little bit earlier, you take that approach, and then maybe you should have replaced something a little bit better. And instead of having the time to make a decision, you get put in a situation where it's like, okay, well, I guess we're buying the new one.
A little more of an emergency. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey guys, wanted to jump in here real quick and thank Jobber for their sponsorship. They are a software program that caters to guys and girls just like you in the lawn care industry. We've used them since 2012 for all of our invoices, quotes, reporting, time tracking, mapping. Their mapping feature is one of the best, as well as the fact that you can customize templates for emails, invoices, quotes. You can get paid directly through the Jobber software program. So thanks to them for their sponsorship. Hope you guys go and check them out. Go to getjobber.com/Britt-Dowd. That's BRITT-DOWD. And that's getjobber.com. So thanks for their sponsorship. Thanks for listening. We'll get back to the show.
Exactly. And those emergencies are never fun. Thankfully, yeah, they've only happened a handful of times in my 15 years. But
in that case, to your point, I mean, you were going to either buy it ahead of time, but instead you waited, and now you're put in a position where you have to have it. So you were going to buy it either way. It's just you gave yourself a little more time to make sure there's no alternatives. Yeah, I always stress. Well, I say I always stress. They say you need to say something like 14 times for your team to actually retain it. You know, they hear it, retain it after 14 times. So probably need to say it more, but just needs versus wants. That's how, I mean, my wife and I run our house like that still. Like, hey, do we need this or do we just want it? And so just kind of gauging your way through both personal life and running a business. In the personal life, there's a little more cushion depending on if you're self-employed or, you know, you're actually base salary, you might have a little more flexibility. But when you're self-employed and you're running a business, there has to be a fine line, and you have to be willing to go off of what you need, not what you want, until you get that little extra margin.
Absolutely. And I even see that with some of our commercial clients, especially like in snow and ice. They're operating on a budget. We get a bad winter, like there's less ability to dig deep versus you get to like a high-end estate, and we're lucky enough to maintain some of those.
Yeah.
If they're doing an install job and they're coming along, oh, yeah, you know what, a fire pit would look good there. They likely have a lot more ability to just dig deep, dump into or pick into savings, have at it versus businesses. Yeah. Unfortunately, not too many of them have that nice rainy day fund.
Which is probably another good point that we should talk about. Hey, I just went live here on Instagram. Country Club Lawn asks a question. If we can circle back to, he wants to know, how are repayments scheduled for a line of credit? And then he asks, is it monthly?
Ours is monthly. I think there's some, the ones you want to stay away from are the ones that want like weekly or daily repayment. That's
okay.
Those are like headed towards borderline loan sharking. If you're having to take those, there's some gnarly stuff going on. Yeah. I would advise against that at all costs.
But if you've got a good cash position, you've got some collateral, normally repayments are monthly.
Correct.
Because you can get into some scenarios where it's a balloon payment, correct? Where it might stack up on you all at once and you just pay it at the end of the year?
Yeah, you can do that. I'm not necessarily, I kind of like the terms that we got. That wasn't really even offered, but yeah, I have heard of those.
Okay. Good deal. Cool, man. Well, we'll keep rolling. We will, if you don't mind, going back to a little bit more of the debt-free viewpoint. So let me ask you, do you guys have, so for example, one thing that we did to stay debt-free was we managed the spikes in income. So anytime, like we have a recurring revenue through maintenance. So fertilizing, weed control, like turf maintenance, tree and shrub programs. Anytime we had a spike in income for grub control, aerating and seeding, we didn't realize that money or whatever the actual, you know, official finance term is. We didn't realize that money. We set it aside, and that was our quote unquote rainy day fund. We would then, once we kind of felt comfortable with that, we would start allocating funds towards reinvestment for the next year. So I'd like you to speak to that a little bit, maybe figuring out, hey, here's my monthly budget, my monthly top line. Here's what I, you know, net at the end of the month. and then any spikes in income, saving that. I would like to get your viewpoint on that, and then just kind of addressing that that slush fund, or I call it an emergency fund, on both my business and personal account. So addressing just having that emergency fund, that way, worst case scenario, you know, at least you and your family are covered for the winter, or at least you know you can make it till that following spring, because it's a big deal in the green industry.
It is.
Our spring has been non-existent. Usually we're getting 70s right now, but we've went, you know, cold from December to still March 1st below freezing. That's crazy for us. So speak to...
Yeah, that's a lot, guys, out shoveling clients' driveways just because you've got them going and they're not putting down pre-emergent for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't do any snow removal. Guys are in the office. They're tired of hearing me talk. So I'm like, well, we'll go shovel some clients' driveway. They can't do it themselves. But yeah, I know that's a lot to manage all at once. Sorry about the long-winded question, but handle all that and speak to that if you can.
Yeah, so we deal with the same spikes in income. All of our like estate and residential clientele, when it comes to maintenance services, right about this time of year, they get a landscape assessment from us.
Okay.
And that covers all the maintenance services from basically a spring cleanup through a fall cleanup, all the fertilizing,
okay,
monthly weeding, weekly lawn mowing, all those things. And we've kind of always presented ourselves like you would see, like tickets to a concert,
yeah,
or seats on a flight. Like, yeah, it's kind of first come, first serve.
Okay.
And when we're sold out, we're sold out.
Yeah.
There's really only so much of us to go around.
Yeah,
yeah, you can always bring in subcontractors, but in order to perform the quality that's expected of us, I've found that I do have to kind of put some cap on things.
Yeah, yeah.
I could really only effectively do so much.
Yeah.
Well, I try and grow that every year.
Yeah.
It is what it is. So we hit from like March, April, that money is just pouring in from prepay money.
Okay.
And so like you were saying, we see a huge spike in income.
Yeah.
And then we've got other services, install jobs that maintain that income through the rest of the summer for,
yeah,
us.
Yeah.
But We also in our business don't realize all that money. It's not like, ooh, it's March, let's,
yeah,
go on a spending spree.
Yeah, yeah.
And a majority of that money gets put into our business savings account. And so it's not sitting there in the checking account to be spent.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that helps us align where that money needs to go and when is the use of a budget and,
yeah,
then checking that budget that we,
yeah,
were seeing how that money's being outlaid.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, as long as we're able to adhere to the budget, that big surplus of money that comes in is really evenly distributed to the costs of those maintenance services.
Good.
Throughout the year, be it the supplies that go with it, the labor,
yeah,
that goes with it, and even the kind of even distribution of flow out for just overhead costs,
yeah, yeah,
throughout every month. So,
okay,
that's been really helpful to us. So we'll typically see that savings account, which, you know, part of it is a kind of a rainy day fund. It,
yeah,
really balloons over the,
yeah,
next 60 days for us.
Yeah.
And then it slowly shrinks.
Yeah.
And that puts us in a position towards the end of the year where if we've overachieved and maybe done better on expenditures than forecasted,
yeah,
or being able to do things more efficiently, it puts us in a position to look at reinvestment.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the order of operations for us. I'm quicker to look at reinvestment,
yeah,
than I am at taking money out of the business.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of counterintuitive being a debt-free guy, I'm actually,
yeah,
a real big fan of Robert Kiyosaki, and I've always liked his thought process that, like, if you're an employee,
yeah,
you get paid. If you're a business owner, you should be able to almost kind of, like, not have to take money out of the business,
yeah,
if possible.
Yeah.
And that down the line, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't be... You know, you can't compromise your high income skill by,
yeah,
pilfering all the money away and then,
yeah,
building up this immaculate Instagram worthy lifestyle.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Just, yeah. And a lot of people can fall into that trap too, by comparing, you know, a lot of those guys are just putting,
yeah,
on a front, you know, They may have a good lifestyle, but their business isn't thriving. So if you don't mind me asking, let's talk a little bit about like top line revenue and maybe how that's changed the game for you as far as margin and if that switched anything in your business. So 15 years, that's perfect. 5 year, 10 year, and what you think you're going to do 15 year. If you don't mind, I mean, would you be open to sharing top line?
Yeah. So share. Yeah, I can share some ballpark numbers with you.
And if you want to give a range, you don't have to give like to the dollar, but give the top line for 5 year, 10 year, 15 year, and then what your margins were on each of those 3 points, please.
Sure. So at 5 year, we were definitely doing under $100,000 still. Okay. We were starting to push that mark. Yeah. There was so much reinvestment going into the company. Our margin was very, very slim at that point.
And that was you, your brother, and a couple other guys, correct?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Some guys and I was going through all the fun of like putting guys on payroll and all the taxes that come with it and trying to acclimate ourselves as a business to just, you know, paving our way. The downside, and I run into, I think a lot of us run into it, is I came from the, I know how to do this. Yeah, I got some schooling in the landscape end, but I didn't necessarily have like a degree in business. So I've had to surround myself with people that can educate me on that throughout the years, kind of build the team of resources of people who have that knowledge and
find good
15 years down the line. I know a few things, but
find good mentors for sure. And, okay. So you brought up a good point. 5 years in, I mean, you were still pretty low top line revenue. It takes a while to get going and it's just like anything else, you know, you're building ahead of steam, you're pushing the ball uphill, you're building those fundamentals and systems, but eventually you get to a tipping point where things start to roll a little naturally as far as organic reach, referrals, word of mouth, and you start to learn the ins and outs and how your business is going to operate. So now go to 10 years. What was your jump from 5 to 10 look like?
Yeah, so part of what really helped us leapfrog towards year 10 was part of what I want to say kind of held us back a little bit.
Yeah.
Those first 5 years was I was still in school. Yeah. So it was, there was a lot of like trying to do stuff on weekends or half day here. Yeah. When I graduated back in 2010, after year 5, all of a sudden it was like, there was no more guitar lessons or any other really side hustles. It was all in on the business.
Yeah.
And that's where we, over the next 5 years, more than doubled our revenue.
Yeah.
And, as we started to pay off, finish purchasing a lot of the initial investments that we needed, that's where we actually finally started to see some margin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was part of the reason I was still out teaching guitar lessons and stuff like that was, consciously working to like buy assets through the business, not necessarily grow my income. And so that was the first time where I was really able to actually realize money coming in was between years 5 and 10. That through that time, I think we really kind of went through the learning curve of there's lots of opportunities for us to do different things, provide different services, but what services are going to be most profitable, which services do we specialize in, what type of clientele do we really want to service? I think that's what's really put us where we need to be for years 10 to 15.
Yeah, good point. So you were doing it long enough, you kind of knew where your niche was, where you wanted to focus on, kind of pinpoint where those margins were best. And you probably, I mean, going to school and then doing it 10 years, found things that you enjoyed and you were more proficient at. And with that, just, I mean, when you're proficient at something and then you enjoy it, with that is going to come the profit.
Correct. Exactly. It's kind of the culmination of everything. And I think it took us a little longer to get going because it was, you know, tied up with school and other things and a bunch of part-time employees. And You know, my friends did as good of a job as they could.
But, yeah, yeah.
But you know, friends and musicians that aren't out on tour, they, you know, their yeah. their heart's not really in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that only takes it so far. And I think
I can only imagine, man, managing some musicians out on the landscape. that's gotta be rough. Okay, so sorry to cut you off, but 5 year you had you, your brother, some college buddies helping, hovering around 100,000. 10 year mark, where are you at employee wise? And you said you more than doubled, so around 200, 250. So yep. And how many team members with you at that point?
It was anywhere from in the winter we trimmed back a little bit, maybe go to like 6-7 guys. But there was one point I remember I like didn't even realize that I had 13 guys working for me.
Wow.
Some of them were every day, some of them yeah. were just part time, yeah. a couple days here and there.
Yeah.
And I got to learn the good, bad, and ugly of that. And
I
think had I not had to go through that learning curve, or maybe went through it a little faster, yeah. we would have realized a little higher yeah. margin there.
Yeah.
Maybe like years yeah. 9 to 10. But
and that's funny. I mean, that's why I started the podcast, because a lot of guys, that's how it happens. High school or college, you're either push mowing, you're landscaping, and then you wake up one day and realize, hey, I'm in a leadership role managing 13 people. They've got yep. families, they've got dreams and aspirations, and there's not really anywhere to turn and look other than social media or on YouTube videos, but not a lot of green industry podcasts. So hopefully we're filling that void for some people. So
I'd agree.
5 year, 10 year. Now hit me with the 15 year top line. What's your, I guess we haven't went over margins, but I'm assuming your margins were hovering around like 30% in the beginning, maybe 50% year 10. What are they at 15 now?
So year 15, we're now more up around the $500,000 a year in revenue mark.
Okay.
And the margins, yeah, like you said, can be anywhere in the 30 to 50% range. Yeah. So we probably could have the other year realized a little bit higher. We had to make some reinvestments in terms of trucks and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Doing those cash on hand versus yeah. financing.
Yeah.
How
about per job, if you don't mind me asking? So let's not go top line. Like your landscaping jobs, are you realize yeah. are you getting about a 50% margin on those?
Yeah, those are always going to be some of our highest revenue producing
okay.
and highest margin producing jobs.
Okay.
And that's really where we've grown into servicing more of a high-end clientele.
Good.
That's really been our focus years 10 to 15.
Good.
So with that, as we found, we've kind of shrunk the company a little bit to service those people and
yeah.
Started doing a little bit more with subcontractors. And
yeah.
there's a multitude of reasons for that. Part of it's even just the labor market here in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah.
But those are always our jobs that we do the best on, but we're able to recoup costs the best on.
Good. On
maintenance, you're going to come across little things, and because we're dedicated, every once in a while, maybe you take the hit a little bit and don't, you know, instead of making 50% of the job, you make 10% because there's some extra this, that, the other.
Yeah.
And it's not really worth trying to change order on a maintenance service
yeah.
versus with landscaping, like I referenced earlier, like, oh, wow, fire pit would look good there. Well,
yeah.
there's a whole change order, some redesign,
yeah.
and people are much more, at least in our market, are much more willing to fork over the cash in this situation.
Yes, yeah. When it's a big undertaking, big project.
Yep.
And to that point, kind of a side note, but along the same lines, we found, we actually looked it up. It's a fact. People are willing to spend 30% more 3 months after they buy a new home. So
sure.
therein lies like the new landscaping, hardscaping, fire pit, and they're used to spending money. They bought a new house. They're excited. So those 3 months window, we always try to target those newer areas when we're door knocking, brochures, social media. So just kind of some stuff to chew on there for marketing 2019. So
yeah.
I want to respect your time. I really appreciate you being on with us. Why don't you share with us a couple things, if it's something you're passionate about or something you want to leave our audience with, and then if you don't mind, just one or two people that you feel like knowing our audience, we should have on the podcast to add value to our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So something I can leave with everybody is as important as it is to set goals in your business and stay up on those goals.
Yeah.
Look long term.
Yeah.
And find things that bring you like big picture fulfillment in your business. For me personally, that's being able to give back. Finding part of that is with the debt-free landscaper, being able to connect with people, help them improve their businesses. A year and a half ago, my girlfriend and I rescued a dog, and I've now started giving back to that organization in terms of not only money, but my time. They were gifted a new building and were involved in the process of moving them into that new headquarters. I volunteered time cleaning up the building. We're going to be doing their new landscaping here. We've done some snow and ice work, and I've all done that out of the goodness of my heart. I refuse to let them even consider paying me for it. So if those things are what matter to you, and it could be anything. It could be giving back at a new soccer league, helping your kids' t-ball team, helping out in your church. Whatever it is, I feel like people in this industry have a lot of opportunities to give back. And those are harder to do when you're getting up and going. But once you've found some rhythm with what you're doing, you're in a groove, you're starting to realize some money coming in. Some people would be quicker to kind of take a whole bunch and be selfish with it. Versus it brings me a lot of joy to be able to give back to that. So
no, that's huge. We always strive to give back, and that goes back to the margin piece. Like, you have to take action, you have to grow your company. Once you get a little margin, one of the best things to do is give back to the community, give back to your personal mission. So that's awesome that you're doing that.
So that's big for me. And then some people that you could have on this podcast. I'd say it'd be probably pretty cool to have somebody like the owner of Case Snow Management. What's his name? Like Justin, I think.
Okay.
Case Snow and Ice Management. They're out on the East Coast.
Okay.
They've got an awesome operation. I definitely, even though I never attained to be that size of a company, I think it's really fascinating how, doesn't seem like he's like, maybe I'm wrong. He just looks really good for his age, but he doesn't seem like he's that old of a guy, but really has figured out how to, balloon out his business. One of the reasons I think of that is I've seen them, I've known who they are for a few years. I know they were out on the East Coast. And I was actually, I do some salting for Brian from Brian's Lawn Maintenance, and he's got a couple sites around here.
Okay.
And like 2 weeks ago, I was out salting and I see a Case Snow and Ice Management truck, and I'm like, get out. They're in our market now. Like, who are these guys?
Wow.
So I think it'd be cool.
So how should I approach that? Should I say, hey, Mr. Case, Mr. Bedell thinks you're a really good, young looking guy?
There you go. Throw me under the bus. I'm curious because some of the other guys that are in that like top 10 snow and ice management companies, you're talking about like Brightview, and a lot of us know they're a big publicly traded company. If you could get anybody from there to
I could get their secretary online with us maybe.
Or some of them, like one of my mentors around here in a company we've done some subcontracting for, Troy Clogg. He's probably more approachable. It would probably be pretty easy to get him on this podcast.
Are they on the top 100 list? Are they?
Sure they are. Yeah, I think they're one of the top few on there.
Oh, wow.
And so most of the guys are like veterans in there. You get to know them, and you're like, yeah, you've done this for 20 or 30 years. You worked your way up there over like a long period of time. Versus like, it seems like this guy like came in with like a very like stealth business plan. I think that would be cool to see. Like, it seems like you're trying to kind of cover the big spectrum on your podcast from like servicing the small owner operator guys mm-hmm. to people maybe have a couple crews
yep.
do less than $1 million a year. But I think that would be cool, kind of like you've had some industry leader guys that Corey yep. Ballard on.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that'd be like another one on there, or somebody awesome. Who's figured out
yeah.
different ways to yeah. Kind of go big in the industry. Yeah. And I know that there, even though that's, like I said, not something that maybe I want to attain to in my company.
Yeah.
Be good. That doesn't mean that I don't respect yeah. that. And
be
that
good
I don't,
reference
I,
point. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of good nuggets. Like, yeah. What's interesting is a lot of my mentors are like big business people
yeah. Yeah.
who've operated like publicly traded companies
yeah.
and stuff
yeah.
like that. And,
it's all the same
lucky enough to have as clients
yeah.
and,
all the same problems, honestly. I mean, there's bigger numbers, more team members, but all the same problems. And yeah, we have yeah. tried to do that. We try to relate small and medium, but also give people perspective on what could be if they want to go there. And oftentimes
yeah.
it helps people see the pitfalls to look out for right before they get to that point. So
totally. Yeah. And that was basically the point I was going to make, is those people who've operated on that big macro level.
Yeah.
They've probably lived through the crap you're going
yeah.
through.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, in turn, they, I know they've at least done it for me. They've had some nice nuggets. And
yeah.
so,
yeah.
You know, whether or not you get them out or not, that'd be pretty cool. But
cool.
I when I saw his truck the other day, I've just kind of been thinking about that.
Cool.
Like, how big is this guy gonna get? Like,
yeah.
are they the next Brightview?
Yeah.
Like, this is awesome.
That's cool.
And I think that's kind of cool. I think it's cool to be a cheerleader for the industry a little
yeah.
bit, and kind of cheer everybody on and,
yeah.
and cheer them to achieve their goals, because
yeah.
I think we all get there, like, you know, a rising tide raises all ships. So
yeah. Yeah.
if everyone's out there going for the W, I think that's good. You said on a podcast, something about like the most successful people keep score or something like that.
Yeah, winners keep score. Yeah, yeah.
Yep, yeah. I think that's huge. I think that's something. Whether it's you know, it doesn't have to be an actual scorecard. It can be a budget.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and a goals list and
yeah.
some other things to attain to.
Yeah.
But I think that's it. If you're
yeah.
keeping score and you're cheering everybody on,
yeah.
You know, go find out the guys who are like winning the championship.
Exactly.
See what they're doing.
Exactly. See what they're doing, how they're winning, and you can't win if you don't know how many you had yesterday. You know, if you were at a 2 and you strive for a 3 the next day, that's success. That's all you can do is keep getting after it. So, man, Mr. Bedell, you're awesome. You're the man. You're doing big things. Like I said, I really appreciate your time, and I know our audience got a lot of good content out of this, so I thank you a lot. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. It's always great chatting with you, and I appreciate what you're doing with the industry, man, so keep it up.
Yeah, I will see you around soon, hopefully. Are you going to be at the expo?
Yeah, GIE?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I
okay.
will 100% be there. I'm
okay.
definitely committed to that.
Yeah,
so.
me too. If you're okay with it, let's plan on meeting up.
Yeah, I'd love
cool.
to.
Cool,
I would love to do that.
Cool, man. All right, well, we'll see you there. And like I said, appreciate it. We'll talk to you over on Instagram.
Sounds good, man. Have an awesome day.
All right, see ya. Keep at it. Bye.
Bye now.
YOLO. Hope you guys enjoyed that show. A lot of fun. A lot of content in there. Really good guy. You guys go over, if you have questions for him, search him at Bedell Property Management or Debt Free Landscaper, or I'm going to tag him in our most recent post. So if you guys have questions for either one of us on some of these topics, don't be a stranger. Reach out to us. We'll be happy to help you out in any way we can. At the top of the show, kind of teased a giveaway. So now I'm going to fill you in. It's going to be our shout out as well. So our shout out is to Nicholas with Uncaged Handmade. If you search him on Instagram, he does really cool custom like leather handmade hats, just any sort of leather working. That's going to be our giveaway. You're not going to see it yet until we post it, but go follow his work. Really cool stuff. He also, so that's kind of his side hustle. He also runs a full-time lawn business. He does spraying, does a lot of insect spray out there in South Carolina, I believe it is. So follow him on Instagram, hit him up. But we will be tagging him whenever we do the giveaway, and you guys are going to want to make sure you check that out, because that's going to be pretty sweet. He's created some really, really cool designs for us, just for our listeners. So again, we really appreciate you guys being listeners. Chat with us on social media. We want to hear how business is going for you, what's going right, what's going wrong. That's what we're here for. That's the reason this podcast and platform exists. So thanks again for taking time out of your day to share it with the Lawn Care Leaders community. Hope you guys are still getting after it, and we'll be back with you again next week.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.